Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Dorchester native Patrick Radden Keefe's new book takes place across the pond, but it certainly hits home. It's called Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. It's about the 1972 disappearance of Jean McConville, a single mother of 10, during the period of nationalist and religious violence known as the Troubles. Keefe not only attempts to solve McConville's kidnapping and murder, but also captures the trauma felt by an entire culture. And he does it with the help of a rich and controversial archive at Boston College. Patrick Radden Keefe, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you.
So I know you're a native son. You grew up in Dorchester in the heart of Boston's Irish community, but you've written that it's actually not your childhood that attracted you to the story. So what did?
Well, my day job is I'm a staff writer at the New Yorker magazine, and I write these big, sprawling narrative pieces. And so I'm always casting about looking for ideas. And in 2013, I read an obituary in the New York Times for a woman named Dolores Price, who had been the first woman to join the IRA as a full frontline soldier. And she lived this very dramatic life. And one of the details in this obituary was that she had been implicated in this famous crime from 1972 when this mother of 10, Jean McConville, was abducted in front of her children and taken away and shot and disappeared. The kids never knew what happened to her. She was buried in a secret grave. So the way this started for me, you know, I'd been aware of the Troubles growing up, certainly in Dorchester. But my real interest here came from that obituary and the idea that you could look at the stories of these two women, one a victim and one a perpetrator, and try and tell a larger story about the history of the Troubles.
Yeah, and you really bring Dolores Price to life, Patrick. You know, the bedtime story in my house last night was The Little Engine That Could. In her house, it was something different, very different. Could you fill us in?
Yeah, so she came from a long line of Irish Republicans. Her father had been in the IRA. She had relatives on both sides who'd been in the IRA going back generations. So when she and her sister Marion were little, their father, Albert Price, who was a famous longtime IRA guy, would sit them on his lap, and he would tell them bedtime stories about when he was young and, you know, he was locked up in Derry jail and he broke out, or the time that he went to London on a bombing mission. And he would tell them as little girls, he would tell them the recipe for mixing improvised explosives, and you have to do it with wooden utensils because otherwise they'll blow up. So this was the atmosphere that these two young girls were raised in.
Just normal fatherly advice there.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, you know, Dolores and Marion Price might have taken any involvement in the disappearance of Jean McConville to their grave, except that Dolores participated in this oral history project at Boston College. So fill us in on that. And how did those records come to light? Because they were meant to stay secret.
Exactly. So the book is called Say Nothing, and that's from a Seamus Heaney poem, Whatever You Say, Say Nothing. And I think probably some of your listeners who share my heritage might might appreciate that there's an element in Irish culture in which certain things are left unsaid. And this was particularly true during the Troubles, when there was a real code of silence, particularly around paramilitary activity. So after the Good Friday Agreement in 1998 puts an end to the conflict, Boston College, which had long roots, tying it back to Ireland, decided to do something to commemorate the end of the Troubles. And a decision was made to start a secret archive. And the idea was, you have all these paramilitaries who otherwise would take their stories to their graves. Let's create a situation in which they can talk about the things they did and be really candid about the worst years of the conflict. And, you know, the things they were talking about in many instances are war crimes and crimes where there's no statute of limitations. So you had to do it in secret, because otherwise nobody would talk, right? They would worry that the cops would get their hands on these recordings. So what BC did was the promise that was made was essentially, come on in, tell your stories at great length. You know, people would come in and talk for 10, 12, 15 hours. And we'll put it in a time capsule until you die. And, you know, we'll keep it top secret. It was all going to be kept in Chestnut Hill under the strictest secrecy and only released after the deaths of these people. And that was a promise that it turned out BC couldn't keep. And so part of what the book is about is that this all unraveled in a pretty spectacular fashion. A lot of people came in and did tell their stories. But in around 2010, 2011, word started to leak out about this archive. And at that point, the authorities in Northern Ireland said, wait a second, so in Boston, there's an archive of people who are still alive talking about the atrocities that they committed during the Troubles. Couldn't we get our hands on that? And that's what they proceeded to do.
And I understand that you weren't able to get your hands on the entire archive, at least not directly from BC, but that other sources were able to give you material that helped to form the basis of the book and helped you investigate this kidnapping and murder of Jean McConville. So without totally spoiling the book, Patrick, fill us in on what you were able to discover that's new.
Yeah, so look, I mean, the approach that I wanted to take in this book was not the approach you would take in writing a history book. I wanted to treat this almost more like a novel, that I was looking at the lives of a half a dozen people, and I really wanted to be as vivid as I could in terms of understanding them and all their complexity. So it's people like Dolores Price, Jean McConville, Gerry Adams is a big character in the book. And I learned a lot about what had happened to Jean McConville, in part because I did get hold of one of the one complete Boston College transcript, and then the transcript of another unpublished interview that had been in that collection as well. But there was this one stubborn mystery, which was who it was that actually pulled the trigger. So, you know, somebody killed Jean McConville, and when they squeezed that trigger, they made 10 orphans because she was a widow. And very late in the game, I figured out who that person was, and it's somebody who's still alive and had not been identified before. And so I made the difficult decision, in consultation with a bunch of lawyers, as you can imagine, to publish the name in the book.
Well, so how about that? Because you talk about that sort of culture of silence. It's right in the title of the book. It's sort of contrary, I'm sure, to your DNA as a journalist. But is that something you wrestled with? It sounds like you did a little bit. You know, how much do you reveal here? Are some secrets better left buried? Or as a reporter, do you just, you know, tell what you know?
Yeah, you know, I tend to be pretty dogmatic about telling what I know. I tend not to pull a lot of punches because I feel as though when you're doing that, it stops being journalism at a certain point. And I should say, different people play different roles, right? So accountability is one question. I mean, there are things that I write about in the book that maybe people should be prosecuted for. It's not my business. You know, maybe there's the evidence there, maybe there isn't. I'm not a prosecutor. It's not what I do. My job is to go out and uncover the truth as best I can. And I feel as though that's an important thing. And I think that in Northern Ireland and in other places, you know, you can try and brush the past under the rug. You can try and bury the past, but it won't stay buried.
So we do have a little bit of archive sound of Dolores Price. This is not from her BC interviews, but it's from a documentary called I, Dolores, that came out last year. And she was talking to a filmmaker about how she viewed informants who maybe included Jean McConville. At least that was the allegation at the time.
I certainly advocated that informers should be thrown out. Their bodies should be thrown out on the street to put the fear of God and the Republican movement into anybody who would choose that form of life.
So you see there the scare tactic that the kidnapping of Jean McConville was, right? I mean, the accusation was that she was informing on the IRA and she needed to be make an example of, Patrick.
Yeah, except that the difference there, well, I guess 2 points. One is that that yes, so the allegation was that Jean McConville had been informing and giving information to the British Army. Her children, who are all grown up today, have always really strenuously denied that. They've said this is wrong. She was a widowed mother of 10. You know, how could she be some super spy? What information could she have gleaned? I don't come down one way or the other in the book. I just present the evidence and let the reader draw their own conclusions. The interesting point that Dolores Price is making, though, is that normally what would have happened is if you have an informer, you would kill them and you'd dump them on the street. With Jean McConville, they disappeared her. And that was, I think, by most people's admission and even Dolores Price, they would say it's a much worse thing to do, right? Because if you dump the body on the street, it's obviously a terrible, brutal thing to do to the family. But the family can bury the body and they have a grave to visit and they have some sense of closure. The problem for the McConville children and for others who had family members who were disappeared is you just don't know. You know, they for some of the children for years thought she would come back They thought she might have gotten amnesia and wandered off. They didn't know what had happened. You know, there were rumors at the time that she might have just abandoned her children and run off with a soldier. So it's a very, very pernicious thing to do to the family members to disappear someone. And this is part of what was interesting to me about the case of Jean McConville. Obviously, 3,600 people died in the Troubles, right? I could have written a book like this about almost any of those cases, but this was such an extreme example.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real cruelty into that lack of closure there. And yet, Patrick Radenkief, I was struck by times when it seemed like even the most villainous characters in your book have some kind of guilty conscience or something. You know, I'm thinking about even that really vivid scene at the beginning of your book about the night that Jean McConville is kidnapped. You know, she's being taken out of her home, and yet her kidnappers make sure that she puts on her jacket, you know, as if she's going to be cold or something. And then someone takes the time to return some of her belongings, right, a purse and some rings to her children, so they'll have some mementos. How do you see that? It was sort of a nuance to the story that was kind of surprising to me.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because, look, one thing that I realized early on and that I very much wanted to capture in the book is that there aren't a lot of mustache-twirling villains in this story. By and large, this is about, you know, ordinary people who are thrust into extraordinary historical circumstances. And many of them did awful, awful things, but I think a lot of them had the humanity to see that those are awful things. And part of what the story is about is I wanted to look at a handful of people who in the early 1970s were really at the vanguard of the IRA and the Republican movement. And in service of the ideal, you know, we want to get the Brits out. They did some brutal, brutal things to themselves as well as to others. They went on hunger strike. You know, they killed people. And then I wanted to track them over the decades and see, well, how do you feel about those things? You know, it's one thing when you're in your late teens, early 20s, and it's the early 1970s. How do you feel later when you're in your 30s? How do you feel when you get out of prison? How do you feel when you get married and have children of your own? And it was fascinating because you can see these people. There was no daylight between them in the early 70s. But you check in on them in the late 90s, and they feel very differently, you know, from one person to the next about the things that they did as young people. So I wanted to try and see these people in their messy humanity, even in their, you know, their moments of kindness. There's an example in the book where there's a character, a guy named Kevin McKee, who was another informant who gets picked up and brought down to a house, and he's supposed to be executed. But they wait a few days, and there are these guys staying in the house with him, and they kind of like him. And he's a fun guy, and he can cook, and he can tell a joke. And when the time comes to kill him, they say, I can't do it. Can't bring myself to shoot him. And so they had to send for another team of gunmen from Belfast to come down and do it. So there are moments like that throughout where even in the height of the savagery of this conflict, you see these glimmers of humanity.
And while most of the book is looking back at history, it is a little bit forward-looking toward the end, Patrick, right? You look at the looming Brexit and how the irony might be that we might end up with a united Ireland in a way that the violent Troubles never could bring about.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, this is – it's very much – you know, a lot of the book takes place in the early 1970s, but the one idea that came back to me again and again is you go to Northern Ireland and the past is the present. They are living with the past all the time. So, you know, there's no real distinction between these two. In some ways, I think the funny thing about Brexit is I think voters in the UK sort of forgot about the Irish border and the Irish problem and the conflict and the Troubles when they made that vote. Not realizing that, you know, if you leave the European Union, then the only border, land border, between the UK and the EU is going to run right through Ireland. And I think they're discovering now that they forgot about that to their peril. The question of reunification is really interesting, right? Because I do think there's a chance, not in the near term, but in the long term, that if you force this situation in which the UK leaves the EU with all of the awful ramifications of that, you could create a situation in which you precipitate a scenario where people actually vote willingly. There's a referendum at some point, and you see the reunification of Ireland, which when you think about all the blood that was spilled in pursuit of that idea over three decades, it's pretty shocking to think that it might end up being an inadvertent consequence of Brexit.
It is indeed. Patrick Radenkief's new book is called Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. He'll be speaking at 7 tomorrow night at the Harvard Bookstore. Patrick, thanks for being with us on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
One note on the way out, the Washington Post is reporting that that debate on the anti-hate resolution has been postponed as House leaders make further changes to the resolution's language. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Callum Borchers. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.